Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Coming to you from Classic City,
the capital of the Bulldog Nation,
it's time for another edition of the podcast designed for the most die-hard Georgia fans in the country.
Here are your hosts,
Tyler and Curtis.
What's up, guys? Welcome back to another edition of the Glory UGA podcast. I'm your host, Tyler, and I've got my co-host, Curtis, here with me today to react to the news that Georgia defensive coordinator Dan Lanning has agreed to a deal to become the new head coach of the Oregon Ducks. I think the news was first broken by Chip Towers, I want to say Friday, and then immediately there was some pushback on that and there were some contradictory reports. But over the weekend, it became increasingly clear that Dan Lanning was indeed going to become the new Oregon head football coach. And the Oregon Ducks athletic program has at this point confirmed that and officially announced that Lanning will indeed be the Ducks' new head coach. And this is not what we were planning to talk about today. You know, we try to plan things out and get things organized a couple weeks in advance. And with the early signing period kicking off on Wednesday, we were originally all set to do a signing day preview episode today. But as you guys know, the Dan Lanning news hits and, you know, it's kind of a big deal when you lose the defensive coordinator from the nation's top defense just as the team is set to start practice for the Orange Bowl this week for the College Bowl playoff. So with that coming down, that force is called an audible today. We're going to try to maybe work in some recruiting stuff into this conversation, but we've got to go heavy with the coaching carousel and all of its implications, and we will do just that. But first, I do want to remind you guys about the Normal Town Cottage here in the heart of Athens. Whenever you plan to take your next trip to Athens, for whatever the reason might be, whether you're coming up for a basketball game, whether maybe you're coming up for a tennis match later on in the spring, coming up to see friends, family, relive the old glory days in Athens, whatever your reason might be, make sure to book your stay at the Normal Town Cottage. It really is a no-brainer, guys. I know over the years, we've always kind of been conditioned to stay at hotels when you're going out of town, but with Airbnb, you can find places that are far, far nicer and more affordable than your average hotel. And the Normal Town Cottage is absolutely one of those examples. Why try to cram yourself into a small, dingy, probably not super clean hotel room when you can stay at a nice, sparkling, clean, immaculate, spacious place like the Normal Town Cottage, featuring three bedrooms, full kitchenette, living room, big screen TV, free tree-lined parking right in the heart of Athens. I'm telling you guys, take my word for this. It is hands down the best deal in Athens. So book your stay today at the Normal Town Cottage. You can check them out on Airbnb. You can go to their Instagram page and follow the links. That might be the easiest way. Or you can also check out the link pinned to our Twitter profile, which is @glory_UGA. All right, Curtis. Dan Lanning is heading to the Pacific Northwest, and I think there are a lot of layers to peel back to this, so let's not waste any more time. Let's dive right in, and let's start here, Curtis. On a scale of 1 to 10, how concerned are you about losing Dan Lanning? There's a lot of bad vibes in the Georgia fan base right now. We've got to pull ourselves out of that. This certainly doesn't help, but on a scale of 1 to 10, how concerned are you about losing Lanning?
I think it depends on the circumstance you're asking. If I'm thinking more short term, I'd probably be more concerned. But if I'm thinking long term, I don't think it's the end of the world at all. I mean, it can easily be replaced, and I know that's hard to say. But the fact is that we were able to replace Mel Tucker, who is a big piece of our defense, especially establishing the foundation. And look at all the success he's had once he's left. and yet we were able to replace him with another guy who was an up-and-comer and at age 35 already secured a huge Power 5 job. So I definitely think he's replaceable long-term.
All right, well, let's take it from both perspectives. All right, so in the short term, on a scale of 1 to 10, give me a number here. How concerned are you in the short term?
I'd probably go 7, realistically. More of like play calling and everything. Now, I do think right. It helps that I know Schumann had the co-DC, and he didn't call the defenses exactly. But he was more in the head of Dan Lanning. You know, they were the ones communicating about what was being called in that situation. So it's not like you're completely replacing him. When you go back to like when Alabama replaced Lane Kiffin, they weren't the same when Sark came in. But Sark had only been an analyst. He really hadn't been in all the on-field decisions that Glenn Schumann had.
Okay, so let me just ask you this. How much do you think this impacts our game prep for the Orange Bowl? It's kind of a big deal. It's kind of a big game. How much does this impact us?
You know, if it wasn't for the fact that this is Kirby Smart's team, realistically, and his defense, I would probably be a lot more stressed out. Because that's like when you see it, a lot of the times it has been offense lately. And like when I bring up the Alabama with Lane Kiffin, you know, offense isn't really, let's be honest, Nick Saban's forte. And offense isn't Kirby Smart's forte, but he does know his defenses. And that's why I kind of am not freaking out, because I think no matter what, he had an input on our defense in the game plans week in, week out, and kind of what we did. I mean, you saw Kirby on the field always, you know, him just as much would be signaling audibles and different when we were changing coverages and blitz packages and all those things during the game. So he had just as much in-game input than most coaches do. So I don't think it's the end of the world.
Yeah, I'm going to put my number like a 3 or 4, maybe max. I know this sounds crazy.
Mine depends on who calls the plays between Schumann and Muschamp is probably where my concern sits. Because if it's Muschamp, I know he's helped out on the defenses a lot, but he wasn't involved with everything as much as Glenn Schumann has been in the long run. And so that's where I think it really depends on who's going to be the one actually making the defensive calls.
How do we know it's not Kirby Smart?
If it is, then I'm not stressed out too much either.
Obviously, he always has a headset on defensively. He might not be the one sending the play calls in, but you know he's going to have a significant influence on what plays are called on a down-to-down basis for our defense.
Yeah, always has been, realistically.
And that's not. I think it's not going to change. I think maybe even more so at this point.
Yeah. So that's why I was about to say my concern would only be short-term, and it's really only if Muschamp calls the defense. Now, I have faith in Muschamp to be a great DC. I just don't know about the quick turnaround and replacing where we've kind of gelled schematically and knowing your players and everything in that situation.
Yeah, I mean, look, Will has been involved in our defensive game planning all year. I know technically he has a title of special teams coordinator, but that's kind of a name only. Yes, technically he oversees the special teams, but really what we've done since he took over is kind of divvy up those responsibilities like we used to when we didn't even have a special teams coordinator. And yes, he technically oversees that, and on the field you kind of see him doing those things during games, but he's also been heavily involved in the defensive game playing as well, because let's be real, that's what Will Muschamp does. That's how he made a name for himself. He's a defensive coordinator, defensive coach at heart, just like Kirby Smart is. So he's been involved, and I'm not concerned about him coming over full force here saying, all right, you know what? Now I am the defensive coordinator. I'm a co-defense coordinator. I don't know if he's going to call plays. I don't know how that's going to work out. I'm sure Kirby and them are still trying to, you know, flesh it out themselves. But I will say this about losing Lanning at this point, heading into really the beginning of preparation of practices for the Orange Bowl next week, and it starts next Tuesday. It doesn't help. Like, losing Dan Lanning is not a good thing. That does not help us. I'm not going to sit here and spin it and say, oh yeah, it's a great thing. No big deal. I mean, it doesn't help. Okay. It doesn't, but that doesn't mean it has to be like a killer. And that's kind of where I am with this. We have, as you mentioned, Curtis, having a defensive centric head coach that really helps dull the pain here, helps mitigate that loss considerably. And I'll also throw this in. Yes, our defense, I think, if you look at it statistically throughout the entire year, the Alabama game and the SEC title game, notwithstanding, has been the best defense by and large all season long. I think almost any observer of college football would tell you that. And Dan Lanning has certainly played a significant role in that, obviously, as the defensive coordinator, overseeing the entire thing. But let's also be clear here. Dan Lanning has not done this alone. Dan Lanning does not sit in a conference room by himself and come up with a defensive game plan all by himself each and every week. That's not how that works. Now, is he calling the plays out there on the field? Sure. Is he the guy set up the meetings, all those kind of things, overseeing the defense? Yes, absolutely. Again, it doesn't help that he's not going to be fully in like he would have been otherwise. But he has not done this alone. Will Muschamp has been heavily involved. Glenn Schumann has been heavily involved. He's already been the co-DC. Kirby Smart's always involved defensively. Don't let him ever fool you trying to suggest that he's not. Of course he is. So when you have a defensive-centric head coach and you have guys that have been that involved in the defensive game plans, and a guy that's been the former defense coordinator, a very successful defense coordinator himself in Will Muschamp, and Glenn Schumann, who's been game planning with Kirby Smart for, you know, defensively going back to the days of Alabama, I'm just not freaking out about this. It's somewhat of a distraction, absolutely, and you want to have all hands on deck, of course, and I don't know how focused he's going to be on this game. I mean, I'm sure he'll do the best he can, but he's juggling a lot of things here, a lot of responsibilities, and that's tough. So it doesn't help, but it's also not necessarily a death sentence for our team, for our defense. It's not a debilitating loss, in my opinion. All right, Kurt, so that's the short term. Let's look at the long term here. On a scale of 1 to 10, how concerned are you about losing Lanning in the long term? Give me a number.
If I had to be honest, I'd probably say a 2.
That's kind of where I am. Okay, why not much concern in the long term?
Realistically, my biggest thing, you know, I texted you about this on Saturday. You know, he did a good job recruiting when he first got here, but I felt like our recruiting has kind of taken a step back, especially the outside linebacker, the last couple years, to where we actually are going to be very, very thin going forward, especially next year. And I highlight that by two classes ago, the big misses. You know, everyone talks about Will Anderson. Yes, he missed on Will Anderson, but he also missed on B.J. Ojolari. We didn't really go after him at all.
Had his brother on campus and missed him. Yep.
Yeah, and showed absolutely zero interest in him. And instead, we end up with M.J. Sherman and Chaz Chambliss. Not sure it's Sherman. I know it's still yet to be seen, but B.J. Ojolari and Will Anderson have both been immediate contributors since their freshman year. So that's one thing that really
right away.
Yeah, impact players, and that's one thing that really stands out to me is the last couple of classes, he is not recruited.
Throw in Dallas Turner, Kirst. Throw in Dallas Turner from last year's class.
Yeah,
we were heavily involved with Dallas Turner. We didn't get him, and we end up with Chad. I mean, we were probably going to take Chambliss anyway, but that was – I mean, that's our top edge rusher. I mean, I guess you can say Xavien Sawyer, but, like, he's a project. Like, he's a really talented player, but he wasn't – he didn't play that position in high school. It's more of a project. He has a highly rated guy, so we did land him. But there are some pretty high-profile misses on the recruiting trail from that position.
And that's what stands out to me. And even going into this class right now, we don't have a true stud at outside linebacker – on our commit list at all. And it's already pretty much well known fact that we're going to have to go to the portal because we don't have the depth that we need at that position, especially going into this class. So he has taken a step back, in my opinion, recruiting the last couple of years at his position. So I want to point that out first. And then second of all, like, if it stays with Muschamp and Schumann as co-DCs, I have full faith in them recruiting-wise. And I think the one thing that we have to discuss is, realistically, there is an opening right now. And it comes down to, do we give it to give it back to Scott Cochran and make, you know, Muschamp almost coach outside linebackers or something of that? Or do we go and hire a new outside linebacker coach to help recruiting also? Because if we do hire a new outside linebacker coach to also help recruiting at that one position, I don't think you'll miss a beat, honestly, defensively recruiting.
Yeah, and we're going to get to that, Chris. I'm glad you brought that up. Got that in a couple of questions. We'll definitely dive headfirst into that. And I want to touch on Dan Lanning as a recruiter here just for another minute. I don't want people to sit here and think that we're just crapping on Dan Lanning, saying, oh, this guy's a terrible recruiter. That's not the case. Dan Lanning was instrumental when he came on board in kind of really firming up Nolan Smith's commitment. He's done a good job for us. He's been a good recruiter. I just don't think he has been an elite recruiter while he's been here now. There have been some high-profile misses, and you're exactly right, Kurst. That position that he inherited was it was like the strength of the team. It really was. And then now we're going into next year, and it's a flat-out liability, especially if Nolan Smith doesn't come back. It is a liability heading into next year. We're in a position where we have to hit the transfer portal hard. And look, coaches miss, guys. Even Kirby Smart, he doesn't land everybody he wants. Every coach is going to miss a guy here and there, but it's kind of become more of a trend the past couple of years at that position. I know everyone wants to look at receiver and say Cortez Hankton hasn't recruited a high level, and that's probably fair. He hasn't landed some of those big-time guys.
So no one's going to argue with you in him or that comment, but especially defensively, yeah. Where like that's Kirby Smart's bread and butter. And that's another reason why I'm not exactly fear or scared as much, because as long as Kirby's the head coach, defensive recruiting is not going to be as much of an issue. Right. But He definitely has been the weak link of our recruiting at that on defense lately.
I think defensively, yes, because let's be real. Glenn Schumann is a monster. Now he's missed on a couple guys too. He missed on Noah Sewell a couple years ago. But like the fact that we almost got Noah Sewell was a testament to how good of a recruiter that Glenn Schumann is, because that guy was always going to go to Oregon with where his brother was. You know, their family's very close knit in that culture. And the idea that we came as close as we did to pulling him from the West Coast like that, that's a testament to how good of a recruiter that Glenn Schumann is at the inside linebacker position. And he's landing guy after guy after guy at that position. And look, we have some guys that are undervalued as edge rushers in this class. I think Carlton Madden's going to be a really good edge rusher. I actually like Darius Smith. And those guys they're not highly rated. They're not the big five stars. They're not going to, you know, make a splash and at least on signing day and all that kind of thing. But I think those guys can be big time players for us. But the fact is there have been some really high profile misses at that position. And that's put us in a tough spot at the position that he actually has coached. Now he's the coordinator, but he's also the outside linebacker coach. It's put us in a tough spot there. So from a recruiting standpoint, I guess all we're saying here is that it's certainly not a debilitating loss. In fact, from a recruiting standpoint, there's a possibility to go out there and upgrade. Is that fair to say, Curtis?
I think it is. I mean, you're realistically allowing Muschamp to truly be in charge of, or, you know, more input on the defense. You're already seeing dividends. I mean, think of Singleton and people like that, that Muschamp has been the lead recruiter, the way he has changed it, just his input on things lately. Having him truly in a consistent on the field position where we know he can go out recruiting and doing all those things already helps. Like, you're not going to miss a beat as much. And then if we're able to replace him with maybe another young up and comer who's hungry and ready to go prove themselves, I don't think it could be bad.
Yeah, I think I tend to agree with you.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 is declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
So here's where I want to go next, Curtis. I want to get your take on exactly how this is going to play out over the next 3 weeks leading up to the Orange Bowl, because I'm sure you saw this. I'm sure all of our listeners out there saw this when Kirby released it over the weekend. But I thought Kirby Smart put out a rather ambiguous statement regarding how this is going to play out moving forward with the defensive coordinator position. Because this is what he said. I got the quote right here. He said, quote, "While he will coach with us for the upcoming College Football Playoff, we will move forward with Glenn Schumann and Will Muschamp as co-defensive coordinators. Dan and I are both looking forward to preparing for the College Football Playoff." I don't know about you, Curtis. Maybe this is just me, but I think that statement can be read a couple of different ways. How do you interpret that statement and where we're going with the defense coordinator position in the immediate future and also heading into next year?
The immediate future, Lanning will just be a position coach, in my opinion. I think that's how I read it. He's going to be only a position coach coaching his position. He may have some input on the game plan, you know, just because I think we value his opinion, but I don't think he's going to be the one putting it completely together and implementing it. And then going forward, I have to believe that this was always the plan. You know, forever, I mean, I felt like it was, for the most part, kind of foregone that Lanning was going to leave because he was such a hot commodity. And it was just more of when the job came open that was the right fit for him. But the fact is, I always thought that Muschamp and Schumann were the future of the defensive position, or, you know, the leadership of that defense. Because they're both guys, and you have to continue to give Schumann raises and promotions and things because he is such an instrumental part of that team recruiting wise. And he's like almost, in my opinion, like a protege to Kirby. So he's gonna, he deserves it. And then Muschamp's also just such a great defensive mind that I feel like, yeah, I know it's very vague, but I think it's just vague in the fact that, like, I know we're saying it's how we're going forward, but I wouldn't be shocked if just you start, it comes September next year and it's still no new statements have been made. Nothing's been changed because I really don't, I think barring some other losses, that's what the plan is or has always been going forward.
Yeah, so I think a couple of different ways you can look at this. I think you could potentially look at it as, hey, you know what? It's business as usual in the college football playoff. Dan Lanning, defensive coordinator, play caller, whole nine yards, and then it's a Muschamp and Schumann next year. Or you could look at it and say, you know, as you said, Curtis, Lanning would be part of the staff, kind of assisting as an assistant coach, a position coach, outside linebackers in the playoff, but not in his former role as defense coordinator and play caller. And then here's where, and I think that's, I agree with you there, Curtis. I think that's how it's going to play out. Lanning's going to be on the staff, will be here. His responsibility is certainly going to be split because he's got to be preparing for Oregon and still recruiting the whole nine yards. But I think he'll be on staff and he'll be assisting in some way, shape, or form, probably just as a position coach. But then the question becomes, all right, and this is where I think there's some ambiguity here. When Kirby says, we will move forward with Glenn Schumann and Will Muschamp as co-DC, is he referring to Muschamp and Schumann as co-DC for this game and then we reevaluate going into next season? Or is it Muschamp and Schumann as co-DC for this game and next season? What's your read on that?
See, my read on it is I think it's going into next season also. Just because they're co-DC, and as you've seen, it doesn't mean the salaries and everything are going to be same. Like, I think salary-wise and some of those things will come out later of, you know, the big bump that I'm expecting Schumann to get. And while Muschamp may get a bump, he's not one that kind of really needs the bump as much because you and I were talking about it. He's still getting that $18 million buyout from South Carolina. So him getting the money isn't as much as it is to show Schumann that we value him and getting him up to over $1 million.
I think Schumann's making $600,000 right now. So he needs a million.
Yeah. And yeah, he needs a million, but Muschamp's the one that he'll probably get a bump. But I think you have to kind of, I can almost guarantee there'll be an increase in the assistant coaches pool and the money they get paid. But realistically, I'm expecting Schumann to get the huge bump while Muschamp will kind of be like in the position of where Schumann has been, like getting a little bit less, kind of showing that Schumann may be the front guy, but I don't, that's how I read it.
Okay. Well, let me ask you. So if Muschamp and Schumann, and I think that's how I read it too. I think it can be read another way. And if some of our listeners out there read it a different way, I totally get that. But I'm reading it right now as Kirby Smart saying, when he says we're moving forward with Glenn Schumann and Will Muschamp as co-DC, I think that going into the college football playoff and also into next year. That's just my read on it. I'm with you there. But the next question becomes, Curtis, all right, if that's the case, who is the play caller? They both are not going to call plays. Who calls plays? It's tricky because Muschamp's the guy clearly with the experience edge, and he's been extraordinarily successful as a defensive coordinator at Auburn, Texas, really wherever he's been. LSU's been very, very good as a defensive guy. That's where he's cut his teeth. Glenn Schumann doesn't have the experience, but I think he's a rising star in this profession. I think you agree with me. And this is a guy that we certainly want to keep on staff. I mean, talking about recruiting, he's been a lights-out recruiter. I think, like I say, he's a rising superstar in this profession. I want to keep him long-term. Because Muschamp, even if he's the DC next year, he might not be long for that job. I mean, he might be trying to parlay that into another job somewhere else and kind of build up, go up the ladder again as a head coach somewhere. I don't know. Schumann's still young. He's still an up-and-comer. And I want to keep this guy around for as long as we possibly can. But he doesn't have that experience. So what do you do, Curtis? Like, do you go with a guy that's experienced or do you give Schumann his chance as a way to encourage him to stick around? Because I could certainly foresee a scenario where Dan Lanning offers him the defense coordinator job at Oregon. Can't you foresee that potentially?
I could, and I think that's why you have to give Schumann the chance to call plays. And here's the thing. If it doesn't work out and, hey, he's not – if he shows – ends up not being ready to do that, then I don't know if you have as much of a catastrophe in the fact that they're co-DCs and you're just like – no one truly has to know about the change. I mean, you'll know, but it's not going to be as big of a change where you saw up in Ohio State where they literally took the play calling duty away from the DC and there was no co-DC situation.
Yeah. So what I guess my take on it is I would say Muschamp is going to be around town. He's going to be on the staff one way or another next year, no matter what. He's not going anywhere. His son's still here. They're living in Athens. You're right, Kirstie. He has that money that's still coming in from South Carolina. He's got that windfall coming in. He's in the Fire Coaches Club. But Glenn Schumann, there's no guarantee he's going to be here if we don't allow him to take on those additional responsibilities. All these coaches want to take the next step in their profession. And the next step for Schumann, he's been co-DC. The next step for him is to be like, you can call it co-DC a name, but to be the primary play caller, to be that guy, to be what Dan Lanning has been. And if Dan Lanning potentially offers him that, and there's no guarantee that Lanning is going to offer him that. Maybe Lanning wants to branch out and bring somebody else in that has experience. I don't know. But it's certainly, I think, more than a decent possibility that he would be interested in getting Glenn Schumann over to Oregon. So if that's the case, I think you really need to strongly consider giving him those play calling responsibilities. Like I said, he's much less of a guarantee to be here next year. I think Muschamp's going to be here regardless. Schumann, not as much. So for me, I'm with
you. Schumann just got his second Butkus Award winner under him. So he's a rising star, and you're going to have to reward him.
Two Butkus Award winners in 4 years. I mean, are you kidding me? I mean, Lanning, I think, was a $425,000 bump after last year. As good as our defense has been this year, as good of a recruiter as Schumann has been, as instrumental as he's been in the game planning, this guy's got to get that level of a bump, if not more, honestly. It has to happen. I think you need to give him the play calling duties. And the good thing is you've got Muschamp there with him who has that experience. You can kind of help guide him and help get his feet under him. You got Kirby Smart there as well. I mean, can you have two better mentors in the same building to help you kind of get on your feet in your first time as a defensive play caller, to have those guys to lean on? I mean, it's really hard to imagine having a better situation for a first-time play caller as a defensive coordinator. And I don't know if that's how it's going to play out, but that's how I would go about it if I'm Kirby Smart. Now, he obviously has a lot more knowledge about what's going on behind the scenes than we do, but that's kind of how I would approach it. All right, Kirk, so you and I were both in agreement that Lanning is not going to be calling plays in the playoffs. He's going to be assisting in some role, probably as a position coach. Is that the right move here? Is that the right move to say, all right, take a step back?
I think it is, because I think the fact is, like, Kirby has had firsthand experience probably how much it is to balance. And I think he knows better than anyone what is needed to be successful, and probably wants to be fair to the players that on this team also. And maybe they had a frank conversation, was like, if you don't think you can handle it, I need to know. So we don't know how it all played out between all of them. But the fact is, I think it's a good choice, because it just allows people to focus on what they need to do, what's in front of them, without having something pulling at them pulling them away to try to focus on something else.
Yeah. I mean, you said it, Curtis. Kirby lived this in 2015. Once he got the Georgia job, he lived this. He was trying to recruit for us, and he was also trying to prepare for a playoff run for Alabama. And he actually stayed on as their actual defensive coordinator. He was actually calling plays in the national championship game in that 2015 season, I guess in the 2016, but the 2015 season. And I've heard Kirby talk about this a couple of different times about how hard that was. He called it a living hell. Like, that was just insane. And he would not wish it on anybody. I've heard him talk about that multiple times. I mean, he basically didn't sleep for a couple of weeks there. I mean, that's just what it was. And you saw they won that national championship, but their defense didn't perform all that well because Kirby was torn in 87 different directions, man. That's a very, very difficult thing. No matter what you want to do, you want to do right by both parties. You want to do right by the players that have been fighting with you all year long in that program that's giving this opportunity, but you also are getting a huge pay bump, a lot of money from this new program, and you want to get off on the right foot as well. So you're torn in different directions. Kirby's lived that. And I think that experience has kind of helped him realize, like, this is kind of the direction we need to go. It was really hard for me. I don't think I put my best foot forward in either job. So I absolutely agree, Curtis. I think this is the right move. It's nice that Lanning will still be around. I am very excited that he will be there, because I would love to have his input. I mean, he'll still be involved in the game plan. He's just not going to be the guy that's as intimately involved as he previously was. I think this is the right move. You can't have a guy, when you're talking about a national championship, you cannot have a guy, I don't want to say his loyalties are torn. He obviously wants us to win, but his responsibilities are torn here. And there's just not enough hours in the day for him to do the kind of job that we need him to do as a defensive coordinator for us heading into the college football playoff. And it's just too important. The stakes are too high. You simply can't let it happen. And Muschamp and Schumann have been involved heavily all year long. Of course, as we said, Kirby Smart, defensive minded guy, that helps kind of blunt that loss there to a large degree, in my opinion. All right, Curtis, now anytime an assistant coach takes a head coach job somewhere else, there's always a danger that he's going to take a few of your other assistants with them by offering promotions. We've already mentioned Glenn Schumann as a guy to certainly watch out for here. Do you think there are any other coaches he might target? And if so, who do we need to watch out for?
Well, I was going to say potentially someone offensively, but you're already hearing that he's trying to hire someone he coached with offensively at FSU. So I don't know if that's the case, and I doubt someone like Del McGee or Hankton's going to leave for really a lateral position. Now, defensively, someone like Trey Scott could be someone that you need to watch.
I'd watch the entire defensive staff, to be honest.
Or, yeah, realistically, outside Muschamp, yeah. But, I mean, that's why, you said, you have to lock down Schumann because you have to keep him here. But you have to watch out, especially for Jameel Adil and Trey Scott.
Trey Scott's one to watch. I really want to keep Trey Scott. I know. Remember back in the day, Curtis, like 3-4 years ago, how everyone, like Cortez Hankton's been the popular punching bag about not keeping up on the recruiting trail lately. But remember when it was Trey Scott?
And that's why I think we need to keep him, especially because, well, if Trey Scott's smart, he's thinking, all right, I'm about to have Jalen Carter next year. I've got Bear Alexander coming in. Like, he's good about that. Continue the Jordan Davis thing of having studs up front to where his life's going to be a lot easier, and he has a lot easier selling point than where he's going to have to potentially go start anew as somewhere else.
Yeah, I mean, but to kind of finish my point there, he's a guy that people were beating up on a couple years ago, but how the tables have turned there. He has become a recruiting machine at the defensive line position. And really what I was saying back then too is like, yeah, I know it doesn't look great right now, but he basically has no resume. These guys don't really know what he's about. They don't know. They like the guy personally. He connects with them, but he doesn't have any evidence to show that he's put guys in the league. And that's what most of those players, that's one of their primary concerns. They want to know, can you put me in the league? Can you develop me? But now he's had a chance to do that. Now he's got an Outland Trophy winner, Jordan Davis. We are stacking it up on the defensive line. You're right. The cupboard is stocked next year as well on the defensive front. So I think it kind of would behoove him to stay because he's kind of built this roster, built that defensive front. And you would want to reap the dividends here. And I think that we will certainly pay him as well. But he's another guy. I mean, him and Schumann, we've got to do what it takes to keep those guys. And I do think that there's a very good chance that Dan Lanning will make a run at those guys and try to convince them to make the move to the West Coast. And we've got to do what it takes to keep them. What about anybody in the strength staff, Curtis? The support staff kind of guys.
You always see one guy at least leave. One of the assistants usually is who you'll see go because that's their chance to try to get it. So I wouldn't be shocked to see at least one person in there, and probably two or three people at least out of the support staff, because it's just a chance for them maybe to get a higher analyst role or even an on the field role potentially. Like, that's really what got Glenn Schumann to go with Kirby.
Yeah, I'm gonna throw a name out here is on the support staff and offensive analyst, Buster Faulkner. You familiar with that name, Curtis?
I am. I really hope we hold on to him because I feel like he's the heir apparent to Todd Monken.
He gave up an offensive coordinator job at was it Louisiana Lafayette?
I believe it was Southern Miss.
Was it Southern? Okay, actually, I think it was Southern Miss. It was one of those group of five schools. He gave up an OC job, a college football OC job, to come here as an offensive analyst. And behind the scenes, he does a really, really good job of not just helping with the game plan, but also coaching quarterbacks, also recruiting behind the scenes. This guy is another guy. It's kind of, I think, a rising star that a lot of our fan base might not really be familiar with that name. I've remembered the name. I played against his brother back in high school. His brother was a quarterback at my rival high school. Todd was his name. But Buster's been kind of a force behind the scenes for us. And it's kind of like, you remember when Mel Tucker took the Colorado job? Who did he hire as his offensive coordinator? Jay Johnson was one of our support staffers.
Yep.
And now Jay Johnson is the offensive coordinator with Mel Tucker at Michigan State. So I'm not saying that Dan Lane's going to hire Buster Faulkner as the offensive coordinator to Oregon. If I was him, I'd probably go with somebody with a little bit more experience because he's certainly not as seasoned as like Jay Johnson was. Jay Johnson had previously been the coordinator at Minnesota and he'd been around the block for a while. He was an older guy, a lot more experience. But it wouldn't surprise me to see Dan Lane try to take a guy like Buster Faulkner to Oregon, maybe in an on-field role. Because, I mean, these guys want to take the next step in their career. And for Buster Faulkner, the next step is an on-field coaching job at the Power 5 level. And so that's another name to watch. I think that's another name that Kirby would really like to keep. But if we don't get it, if bottom line is if Lanning offers him a on-field job and we don't, and we just say, no, we're going to keep you, we'll give you a raise, but you're staying off the field, he's probably going to go to Oregon. It'd be really, really hard to turn that one down. So it's just a name to watch. I don't know. Don't have any inside information on that, but that's just one that comes to mind there for me. But there's going to be some attrition. He's going to take some people with him, probably some guys from the string staff, maybe there, but Buster Faulkner, a guy like that, but some analysts, you know, some of those kind of guys, typically you see that kind of movement. Really, and that's inevitable. Those guys want promotions. All these guys do. But as long as we can keep Schumann and we can keep Trey Scott and keep the rest of, like, the on-field staff intact, I would feel okay with that. I feel very good about that. And let's go there, Curtis. And that's what I want to talk about next year. I want to get your take on the composition of our on-field coaching staff next year. There's still a lot to determine and decide here. We still don't know who might get other offers or take other jobs. And Mike Bobo, Curtis, you and I were texting about this.
I was about to bring that up. Yeah, I did.
Yeah, that's a name that, I mean, you and I have been talking about it. I keep hearing around town here in Athens that he has a really good chance of ending up on our staff in some capacity, whether that's on the field or off the field. He's got a son who is a senior in high school this year. Drew Bobo was committed to Auburn. Well, Bobo's not the coach at Auburn anymore. We had been recruiting Bobo, so there's a good chance he might end up, I don't know if it'd be preferred walk-on or maybe as a scholarship if we have an extra one, but there's a really good chance that Bobo is going to be on our staff in some capacity next year. So, Curtis, there's a lot left to determine here, but the limited info that we have to work off of right now, just let's spitball here, man. Like, what is your projection on what our staff looks like next year?
Well, here's my thing. If Bobo comes in as a potential quarterback coach, on the field coach, then my view is Cortez Hankton's gone and we move Todd Monk into wide receiver coach.
That
would be what I actually kind of foresee happening offensively, especially if he wants to bring in a true quarterback coach. I don't know if Monken is a true quarterback coach. I'll be honest. I don't know if that's his forte. You've never truly
passed.
But you haven't heard about it as much lately. So I don't know if they want to bring in a true quarterback coach in Bobo, especially someone who, like, think Gunnar Stockton. He has a great familiarity with Gunnar Stockton. That would be a great way to help develop Gunnar Stockton going forward, which is something Kirby needs really bad, as a young guy to come in and take the job and hold it for 2 or 3 years and not wait for all these stable, you know, these transition people or people that shouldn't even be having the job but having to take it because other things. He needs someone to come in and take it from young age and develop into it. And you can see that with Bobo and, say, Stockton or even Vandegrift, and the fact that he could just focus on them and not have to worry about play calling but developing them. And then defensively, I think that we're going to hire an outside linebacker coach. I think I'm ready to say that I'm pretty positive that I don't think Cochran gets a job back. So I think going forward, we're not going to have a special teams coach but just kind of separate it between them and try to load up on position coaches.
Yeah, I actually, that's the word around town. I'm pretty good authority that Scott Cochran is unlikely to return in an on-field capacity.
Which I hate it for him because I really like the guy. Right. I mean, I can't say I love him like Bama fans do, but I really like him and like his energy and what he stands for. But right now, he's a liability. You know, you and I were texting about that. And I was like, I just think it's dangerous right now to have him because it's going to be tough to go into a parent's home.
You're right.
Yeah. It'll be a tough sell. And then I don't know if he brings enough to the table to potentially take away from a good position coach that can help, you know, focus where we truly need it. Because I think offensively, if we were able to have a quarterback coach and then defensively have one that coaches every position and then like a DC almost that can be over it all, kind of like Muschamp right now helps with safeties and a deal does cornerbacks. But if he could just kind of be like a CEO of the defense or even Monk could be CEO of the offense, it helps them.
So what in that scenario, you said earlier you think Muschamp's going to be back next year. I agree with that. What does Muschamp coach?
Okay, so here's the thing. If Muschamp comes back, then I think we continue where he kind of works with the safeties and a deal gets to focus on cornerbacks. Because I think realistically, that's a hard position to coach as a DB coach because there's two different skill sets when you're looking at safeties and cornerbacks and the way they practice every day, the drills they do, because everyone has to do kind of different drills, different, you know, viewpoints on the way you see the field and things like that. I think it's beneficial to us to have someone work just safeties, putting them through certain drills and the cornerbacks going through certain drills. So I kind of like the idea of him kind of being almost a CEO of the whole defense while also helping out with the safeties and allowing a deal to focus on cornerbacks so that they can get truly developed.
Yeah, I think you're right in saying that. I would predict right now that we do not hire a dedicated special teams coordinator. We kind of go back to the days of yesteryear where we kind of divvy those responsibilities up, because that's what we did when there were only 9 on-field coaches. There was very rarely a team that had a dedicated special teams coach, and the different coaches on staff kind of just divvied it up. Like one guy would be in charge of punt return, this guy would be in charge of kickoff and kick return, and so on and so forth. I think we'll probably go back to that. And it's kind of been that way this year, as I was alluding to earlier. So I think that's the likelihood here. You mentioned bringing in a new outside linebacker coach, Curtis. Do you have any names off the top of your head as to who might be
on that shortlist? To be honest, one name you're hearing, but I don't know. We've talked bad about him, or I specifically have. So I'm going to bring him up, but first I just want to mention the fact is, like, realistically, I don't know off the top of my head anyone that's like a set outside linebacker coach. I would definitely have to look kind of probably in the lower ranking schools to potentially see someone, but I don't know someone off the top of my head that is an established outside linebacker.
That's something you can learn. I mean, coaches make the transition all the time. It's not uncommon.
Yeah, so that's why it's hard. I mean, I think there's two potential people.
I got two on my list here. I want to see if you come with the same ones. All right, who you got?
My first one is Christian Robinson.
Okay, he's on my list.
And then number two is Nick Williams.
Also on my list. Those are my two. Yes. And look,
Williams is the one I was referring to, where we've kind of been really hard and trashing him, which I do think it wasn't handled correctly, and I do. But if Kirby is willing to bury the hatchet and move forward for the best of the team, then I will get behind him. So I mean, I still have some anger with him, but I think that those are the two people I wouldn't be shocked.
Yeah, I mean, Nick Williams didn't leave on like the best of terms, had that on pretty good authority, but it's nothing that he can't come back from. That's kind of how I would phrase that there. I think he certainly would be welcome back in an on-field role, and that's really what he wanted. You know, all these guys, that they want to take that next step, and Nick Williams is no different there. He is an awesome young recruiter. Christian Robinson's kind of built the same way. He's a really good young recruiter. He kind of hitched his wagons to the running backs coordinator and Todd Grantham, but... Todd Grantham's gone and Christian Robinson's a free agent on the market, and Georgia makes a lot of sense. And I guess, I don't know, Kirk, can you forgive him for being a Gator for all those years?
I can, because I forgive him, yeah. Will Muschamp, but the thing is, Muschamp wasn't as vocal on Twitter with the stuff Christian Robinson did.
Like, and I know that he had a job to do, but he was very like vocal anti-Georgia. Did you have a job? I understand that. And like, he was at Mississippi State.
So I tried not to hold him too much, because like people sold their soul for less, realistically, when it comes down to it, for work. So I try not to hold it against him. If you've been in Athens, I've probably seen him around downtown or out to eat, because he was very prevalent in the downtown society.
Yes, the downtown scene that Christian Robinson was for a little while there. Yeah, he's a good dude, man. I absolutely no problems. Wouldn't even blink an eye there. Comes from a really good family. They're great people. I would welcome Christian Robinson back with open arms. Like, do you think that would be a good hire if it was Christian Robinson?
I think it would be. I mean, first off, he's like Kirby in the fact that he loves Georgia, that he played here. So he has ties to Georgia. He can sell everything that they can provide you and say, look, like, hey, if football doesn't work out, they can give you an avenue to be a coach like I did. So, like, he can provide a lot of different things. And, like, he recruited decently. I mean, honestly, if there hadn't been so much turmoil in Florida, he probably would have kept Shamar James.
Well, he recruited really well considering who his head coach was at Florida. It's really hard to recruit around that clown of a human being.
And the non-committal of them all with Todd Grantham, you didn't know when he was going to leave.
Yeah, yeah, all the smoke around Todd Grantham being on the hot seat, all that. Yeah, that's tough. I think Christian Robinson would be a really good hire. I would welcome him back to Athens. I think he would be very excited to be back in Athens. Nick Williams, I would also welcome him back to Athens. I think they're both really good, young, up-and-coming coaches who can recruit really well. And when you're young like that, because think of Curtis, Kirby puts a premium on recruiting, right? And
yeah,
I think our listeners understand this. We have a very sophisticated group of listeners. You guys know your stuff. This is a nonstop job. You're going 1,000 miles an hour, basically 24/7. Recruiting takes up a ton of your time. You do not get to spend a lot of time with your family. That's very, very precious time, because you don't get much of it. So these younger coaches, they typically have more energy and more hunger to go do the things on the trail that it takes to recruit at a high level, to be those kind of mercenary recruiters, the way that Kirby Smart demands of his coaches. The guys that are older have more established families. I'm not saying they don't do it. Del McGee goes out there and recruits his butt off, but it's just harder sometimes. They have more responsibilities. You got a bigger family, things you got to deal with there. And these young guys, they are hungry to make a name for themselves, like Schumann was, like Dan Lanning was, like Schumann still is, I guess. And I think Nick Williams, Christian Robinson kind of fit that bill. So those would be two guys that I would certainly pay close attention to. But Kirby, you know, I will say this, Curtis. Kirby has done a really good job of hiring for his staff. Wouldn't you agree with that?
Oh, I do. And I think that's one thing, you know, we were literally talking about with Lanning leaving. Like, I think I said the whole time I thought the plan was going forward, like, they kind of expected him to get a job. And to go forward, it would be, you know, Will Muschamp and Glenn Schumann. The fact like he does a great job of looking ahead and having people ready to take these positions.
Yeah, he builds a great support staff and trains those guys up.
Replaced Mel Tucker with Dan Lanning. Like, he had that ready to go.
And nobody knew who Dan Lanning was then. And now Dan Lanning, a couple years later, is head coach at Oregon.
Yeah, he was 32 years old at that time. I didn't even realize he was so young. But yeah, like, he had a young guy ready to go.
He was an unknown commodity. So I know people get frustrated with Kirby Smart with some of the coaching decisions and handling personnel, especially the quarterback position. Obviously, we've gone on about that. But this is one thing. Let's give the guy credit where credit's due. This guy has been an absolute killer when it comes to hiring. He has hired.
And he's willing to move on, too, if it's not working like James Coley.
He has shown that ability. And you mentioned Cortez Hankton. You really think Cortez Hankton might be a guy that could get the axe? I don't know if I see that, Curtis. I don't know.
I had to think of someone getting the axe, it would be shocked to be him. I mean, realistically, we have not recruited well at the position. We've hit some diamonds in the rough. But at the same time, I think that he's a casualty. The fact that someone offensively, maybe what we have at quarterback, I don't know, but we've been too stubborn and not throwing the ball. Rotating too much.
That hurts a bit. It's hard to recruit receivers when we don't throw the ball more than 25 times a game.
Yeah, and that's why I'm saying going forward we're going to have to do it. That's a whole other discussion, but
I don't know. Guys like George Pickens, Jermaine Burton, Marcus Rosemead, Jack Saint, Ladd McConkey, yeah. I know it wasn't a big-time recruit, but he
– And I mean, here's the thing, too. Like, you're hearing the potential that Stetson will be back. He'll be the quarterback next year. It's going to be hard to get a wide receiver to want to come play for Georgia thinking that's going to be my QB1 next year. I mean, I know that's a whole other conversation. But the fact is, like, when have you truly seen him throw a lot of the time and be successful in it? And you're like, do I really want to come waste a whole year with that?
Yeah, absolutely does not help. All right, Curtis, I'm going to get you out of here on this one, man. I know you got one last final exam that you got to get to tomorrow, so I'm going to let you go study for that. All right, so talking about Hankton, talk about Bobo. Who are you putting your money on? Who's more likely to be on Georgia's offensive coaching staff next year?
If I had to put money on coaching staff, I say Bobo.
Ooh, say Bobo.
I mean, right now, I know he's a casualty. We've talked about that. But the fact is, even though he's a casualty, then are we really going to lose anything by putting Todd Monken in that position?
But I've also heard.
Well, and you got to think Todd Monken's the one that wanted Ladd McConkey.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. That is true. And that was a very late offer. I've actually heard Hankton's name mentioned in connection with a couple other jobs, LSU. I don't know how strong that was. It was mentioned.
You saw LSU, and he's from Louisiana, so
From Louisiana, so maybe that's just a mutual parting ways kind of thing. I don't know, but I think I agree with you. I think that Drew Bobo, Mike Bobo's son, is going to be on our team some way next year, whether it's scholarship or prefer walk-on, and I think there's a very strong chance that Mike Bobo is going to be on staff in an on-field coaching position in some capacity next year. I don't know exactly what that looked like, but I think there's a really good chance. All right, guys, that does it for us today here on the Glory UGA podcast. Thank you for tuning in and checking out what we had to say about the Dan Lanning news. But we are not done this week. We have plenty more content coming your way. Charlie and I will be back with part one of our bowl season picks. And then, of course, Wednesday night, early Thursday morning, we will have our early signing period recap show for you guys as well. So a lot of great stuff this week. Next week, I will have the Scout of the Enemy Michigan edition episode for you guys heading into the Christmas holidays. So a lot of great stuff for you guys. Thank you for listening. For Curtis, I'm Tyler. And as always, go Dawgs!